Arenado!
This is Brock and Salk.
Brock Huard is my hero.
What Brock Huard says?
No, he's not a Brennan.
Subscribe to receive every episode at Apple Podcasts or on Google Podcasts.
Ah, we stink, man.
Now, here are your hosts, Brock Huard and Mike Salk.
No way!
All right, here we go. Another Brock and Salk podcast. Brock, here we go. We missed last week. Apologies to everybody as we're taking a little vacation around the holiday. But we're here. The Seahawks, I think, have lost twice since we spoke last. So, yeah, there's that. That's rare that happens. I mean, they generally haven't lost two games even in a row during the time we've been together, Brock. And now they're losing twice between podcast episodes. It's crazy.
Yeah, and I guess for the first time, you can officially say they're out of the playoffs, right? They're done.
Yeah, I was wrong on that one, I guess. I wasn't expecting losing every game.
I'm not trying to do that. No. I'm not trying to say you're wrong.
No, I mean, I was.
But you were Captain Optimism.
I was wrong.
You were, thankfully, you were the one that was trying to continue the optimism moving forward. But I guess, unfortunately, with their two losses, they're now officially,
Here's the
they're
thing.
Done.
There's no chance. Oh, no, they're out. Here's the thing. And this is maybe how stupid I am, but also in some ways how I could see the path to what I was trying to get at. It didn't dawn on me until they failed on fourth down against the Bears on the final fourth down that they would lose that game. Now, never once did it dawn. I was watching that game, and I started writing my post-game take of it took a little longer than expected, but the Seahawks found a way to beat the Bears, and Russell was the hero. Because, of course, that's what was going to happen. I was completely dumbfounded when they lost that game. I was watching it man, this is a boring football game, and the Seahawks will win a battle of not very good teams at the end. And they didn't win. I was floored by it. What do you mean? Russell has the ball twice with chances to ice the game, and both times he comes up and does nothing? Does Jack? You know, Brock, everyone's talking about that third down sack, and for good reason, and we can talk more about it. Can you explain to me the second down throw to Tyler Lockett, where he looked like Max Hall taking a crow step and not able to get it there? What was that? What was that?
It is what we have seen a handful of times every single game. It's a miss. I mean, it is a swing and a miss. It is a wow. He never misses those. And every single game, he's missing two or three of those. Well, I could show you every game since he's been back, Mike, and he's had two or three of those that are just like, wow. Wow, that ball just totally either sailed and totally got away from him, or he had very little feel and grip, and it just one-hopped. He one-hopped a hitch route, one-hopped a curl route, one-hopped a crossing route. Those are just total and complete misses that unfortunately, and I think Pete said it to you on Monday, that three or four times every single game that you just that we're getting that
well, and they've been in big spots too. I mean, look, I don't know about you, but when I see Russell make those big throws, I want to fire Pete Carroll.
When he makes his big throws?
Yeah, no, the bad ones. When he makes those big misses. Like when Russ misses.
Oh, okay.
Sorry, when those big mistakes, I should say.
Sorry.
When Russ makes his big mistakes like that, I think you should fire Pete Carroll. That's what I generally get out of it is, hey, if that quarterback who's made that throw every time for 10 years doesn't continue to make them, you should fire the coach.
Is that the silent or loud minority? Mm-hmm. Is that what
minority?
You're
minority? I don't even know if it's a minority. As you go around, it's kind of what I'm sensing.
It is the one opportunity that you do have on a daily basis, right? That you do connect to a text toy, that you do connect to social media channels, that you do connect to listeners. I mean, that is the one thing of doing an everyday radio show.
I mean, they text at me and tweet at me, but I don't actually listen or read anything they say. No, that's not true. I do.
You do.
I do. But I don't know that I could give you a percentage of where people are at right now, but it does seem to be a large group that's just done with Pete. And whether it's because of the last few years or the style or just saying, hey, if it's Pete or Russ, I choose the 30-something-year-old instead of the 70-year-old. You know, that seems to be the prevailing, maybe not the majority, but the plurality opinion. And I think it's flawed in two ways. One, Russell Wilson misses throws, so you fire Pete Carroll is the dumbest logic I've ever heard. The second part of it is finding a head coach, not that easy. And I know there's this belief, you can't find another quarterback. Nobody can. Okay, well, tell me about how easy it is to find a head coach, because I don't think it's much, if any, easier than it is to find a good quarterback.
yeah, I think that is all fair and something we will certainly dig into a ton with this. I will say this, Salk, you and I, you know, I don't know if it's distance or what it is or age, but you and I are disagreeing a little bit more, which is healthy. We've not, you know, we kind of got into a phase of our life where we were too agreeable, yes. Saw everything the same way. When he got sacked on third down, I turned to Austin Weiner. I was watching the game with the Weiner family, and I turned to Austin and I said, they're going to miss this kick. Chicago's going to go down, score, and get a 2-point conversion.
Mm.
I don't know why I felt that way, but it was just like, you can't give a bad team this many opportunities. You can't take that sack.
Okay, well, hold on. Just to be clear, I was not at all surprised when Chicago went down and scored a touchdown or the 2-point conversion. I was okay. Surprised when Russell didn't, with a minute plus and two timeouts needing only a field goal, couldn't even muster a first down.
Yeah. They've not done it all year. They've not had a fourth quarter comeback this year. Right, they've had 5-1 possession losses. So again, if you kind of want to build your little Rolodex or build your little notepad of pros and cons and lists and, you know, fire your coach for this or make this move because of that, you've had 5-1 possession losses and you have not had one, Mike, not had one fourth quarter comeback this season.
So why?
And now you're
you
are 2-5 in your home building. 2-5. 2-5.
So why haven't they had comebacks? Why have they lost the close games? Why haven't they had comebacks?
Well, I think there's been varying reasons. Your quarterback has not been a part of every single one of those, but he has been a part of a bunch of them. And yeah, I it was sad. Honestly, I think that's probably the emotion I had, was sadness that when they get the ball back there, Mike, with a minute to go, I don't feel any optimism at all. And I'm not trying to be like little negative grasshopper and Debbie Downer and everything else that, you know, you can call me on the texts every once in a while. I just did not have a sense of belief because they've not done it this season at all. They just do not, you know, in years past, you're like, great, get the ball back with a minute. He's going to make something happen. They're going to make something happen. They're going to move down the field and they're at least going to give themselves an opportunity. They didn't even cross midfield. They didn't even give themselves even close to and sniff an opportunity. Why? Quarterback's part of it. Why? Play calling is a part of it. Why? Belief is a part of it. Why? Confidence, because you haven't done it all year, is a part of it. I think there's a multitude of layers and factors, and I'm not going to put it all on number three, but ultimately he is the $35 million man, and that is what you get paid to do in those moments, is to elevate and cut through all that other crap.
I'm going to put a lot of it on number three, because if they succeed in those moments, I'm going to put all the praise on number three, and that's how I've been for a decade.
Yeah.
I've never wavered from this for 1 second. And I know it's so funny to read some of the texts. You say that I'm around some of the texts and stuff, and I see these, well, Salk, you've always been a Russell hater, and like, Salk just hates Russ and loves Pete. I'm like, man... If you could send that text to me however many years ago, I mean, the idea is ridiculous. I don't know that anyone in this town has spent more time, maybe as much, but not more time, defending Russ and supporting Russell Wilson. He has been a privilege to watch week in, week out for the entirety of his career. Yeah. Nothing has been more fun to me than watching a dual threat quarterback like Russell Wilson not only win games in an exciting fashion, but change the way the quarterback position is thought of and played in the NFL.
Yeah.
I love Russell Wilson, and the way he's played for the last 20 games or so is not even reminiscent of the player that I fell in love with. He's been terrible. He's certainly not been elite, and at times has been terrible. The question is why? Is it because of him? Is it because of injury? Is it because of Pete? Is it because of the scheme? Is it because of age? Somebody has to figure out, and it's Jody Allen, why the quarterback that every one of us fell in love with doesn't look like himself and doesn't even look good. Is getting beat by Colt McCoy and Nick Foles and you name it. He's come in here and beat Russell Wilson. Why? That is everything. It's not the defense is important. You got to figure it out. The weaponry is important. You got to figure all that stuff out. But for a decade, Russell Wilson has taken chicken, you know what, and turned it into chicken salad. And he's not doing that now. So don't tell me it's just the roster. The roster has always had problems. It's never been perfect, at least since like 2013 or 14. So tell me what has changed that has made Russell Wilson all of a sudden go from good to bad.
if you and I have a hard time trying to tear this question apart, how in the world does Jody answer it? You and I have watched this guy for 10 years, as close as anybody. Mm-hmm. You and I are pretty close to coaches and general managers and gurus. You and I watch every one of these games. You and I have had the privilege to get behind the closed doors. You and I have had the opportunity to go to training camps and watch all of this. If you and I have a hard time sorting this out, how in the world is Jody Allen, who's come into this job and come into this position, how in the world is she going to find that answer?
I don't know. It's a really good question, but she's going to have to. I mean, she does have a lot more access. So you say that you and I have access to people. Yeah, we've got some, but not like she does. I mean, she has the ability to go on a third degree hunt and figure out exactly what's going on and ask everybody and try to determine what that looks like and what's happened and why. You know, if she
when she sits down, Russell Wilson, hypothetically, because this is I was just on The Herd this morning and it was not a great interview because I didn't have a strong, definitive opinion when it comes to rest in peace because it's so convoluted to me. Mm-hmm. But ultimately, Mike, she does. She has the authority and she could do this as owner and say, Russ, I need to talk to you, not your agent, not anybody else. I need you to come to the office. Right. Need you to come to the Vulcan building and we'll do it under after hours and nobody needs to know. But I need to sit down with you and I want to watch you answer this question. And I need you to sit in front of me. And I think, you know, we pay you pretty handsomely and you've done a ton for this organization. And I think this is the seminal moment that I need. I'm just setting all this hypothetical up. And she sits him down. And she says, hey, Russ, how you doing? Tough year. You know, appreciate you. All that good stuff. Just answer me this question. Do you trust Pete? Do you trust Pete in the rest of your career here in Seattle?
Yeah.
Russell's answer to that?
No.
Definitively no.
Right. Bro, you just said you were on with Colin Cowherd. Did Absolutely. You ask him the last time he talked to Mark Rogers? The answer is no. But that's not the right question. Right? I mean, that's Russell's opinion on it.
The because honestly, if you were to ask me if you were to ask me that, what's happened over the last 20 games, I think that trust has been evaporating and broken. I think that's what I feel. I feel a quarterback that last year was the MVP through 10 games or 9 games or whatever, and then got put on ice. And coordinator got moved out, and we're going to put it on ice, and we're going to play the game this way, and we're not going to have the most historically worst defense ever, and we're going to run it, and we're going to play terrible QBs, and we're going to win 12 games and win the division, and yada, yada, yada. And then, okay, we're going to make that QB or coordinator change and bring a new coordinator in here and unfortunately have no offseason and no training camp and preseason, hardly no preseason games. Yeah, training camp, no preseason games, and you guys are going to have to figure all this out during the season. And I think it's been muddied. And then throw an injury on top of it too, and I just see a QB that just I don't think any longer trusts the process here, and that's debilitating. That's debilitating to watch. It sucks to say because, you know, and we talked about this, I don't know, Mike, 5-6 weeks ago when you didn't allow me the camps. You're not going to have this camp and that camp. And all the camps are going to get together and they're going to work it out because I think that is still best case scenario. Mm-hmm. It is still best case scenario foundationally to have a GM and head coach and QB with this much equity actually work together and find solutions and play to each other's strengths. But I don't know if there's been, well, I do know, or at least I believe as we sit here and talk through this, that there's just been a lot of damage done on the trust end of things.
It's really well said, and you made me stop and pause and think a little bit about it. I think you're right. The problem is, what if you turned around and gave Pete the same truth serum and said, do you think Russell Wilson's the best quarterback you can get for this organization to move forward? Are you sure he'd say yes?
I think he would say yes.
I know he'd say it publicly, but do you think he'd say it privately?
I think he would. I think he would say, you know, there's a lot of hurt and then like a lot of these things with head coaches and QBs. And we just watched a divorce happen in New England after 6 championships. We watched a divorce happen. So it is that marriage is so tenuous and so difficult and so hard. And there's a lot of hurt feelings. And but I think that that Pete would. Yeah, I think Pete would ultimately say as a quarterback, yes. Yeah, I do. I think Pete believes that as a quarterback, there is absolutely still enough there over the next 4 or 5 years or whatever Pete has left. But personally and relationally, there's a bunch of broken stuff, bunch of hurt.
From both sides, do you mean, or just from Russ to Pete?
No, I think both sides. I think Pete gets over a little bit easier. I think Pete has moved on in some of those things. But yeah, I think Pete knows everything that I just said. I don't think he would maybe agree to all of it, but I think he knows that his QB right now is in a tough spot, and it's as much psychological as it is physical.
Yeah, it's so funny. So, I hear a lot of what you're saying. I think there's a lot of value to that. The other side of it to me is that, like, the way Russ is acting and playing over the last mm-hmm. year or so is so unrecognizable and disgusting to me that it's hard for me to hear some of the things you're saying, even though I think you're right. Does that make sense? Like, I'm not, this is one of these, there's no necessarily, it's like Pete said the other day, both things can be right at the same time. Like, I think that was eye-opening. It's a really good point you just made, and that trust thing, we've talked about it before, but I think you phrased it really well, and definitely, again, kind of stopped me in my tracks and made me think. But this is the same Russell Wilson who's the only one on the team who takes no accountability for anything. This is the same Russell Wilson who just doesn't make the same kind of throws he used to make. This is the same Russell Wilson who has, for some reason, stopped using his legs at all. I mean, he's not running ever and not using them to escape very often. And I don't know if it's because he can't or because he doesn't want to. And the fear is that the Russell Wilson that became an elite franchise quarterback, I tried to make this point earlier, and it was hard to do on the show, so maybe you can stay with me for a moment. If Tom Brady becomes an elite franchise quarterback by being a 10 out of a 10 with his arm and head and a 2 out of a 10 with his legs, right? That's how he achieves franchise quarterback status. Russell's not a 10 with his arm and head. He's not. He's never been. No one's ever made that argument. It's that the total package of Russell being, let's say, a 7.5 with his arm and an 8 with his legs, right? That and his creativity and stuff, that combination turned him into a quarterback nearly the equal of Tom, or just put him in the elite category.
Yes.
The problem I have is that if you are going to diminish the legs, and if they go from an 8 to a 5, 4, I don't know what the right number is, but if they decline, in order to stay at the same level, the arm, head, etc., has to grow. And I don't think that Russell's gotten necessarily significantly worse with the arm, but it hasn't grown enough to compensate for the things that are being taken away with his escapability, with his creativity, etc. All of those things that he did that made him special.
Agreed.
And so the Russell you see right now is a good quarterback because he's still a perfectly good thrower of the football, finger aside. But he's not necessarily extra because he doesn't have the thing that turned him into the extra player. And by the way, we talked about this being a possibility when he signed his last contract. And we said, yeah, it'll happen eventually. It's our fear, but we still think the risk is worth it right now because by the time it happens, you'll be so far down the road, yada, yada. And it's possible that's happening now. You know, I don't know how else to explain the fact that the guy won't use his legs for anything.
I know. But what's weird is when you actually do see him move.
He looks fine.
You do see him. He looks fine.
And that's why. That is
confounding.
No, it's not. Because the next, well, maybe it is. But the next part of that problem is, okay, if it's not physical, it's mental.
Mm-hmm.
He doesn't want to. It feels and has felt to me for a while now like the biggest problem with Russ. And this is why I think that trust question is a good one back to Pete about Russ. Russell feels to me like he's trying to prove he's something else. Yep. I'm good at X, but I want to show you I'm good at Y and Z.
Because that's what the very best in the game are known
as. Right.
And that's what I want to be. I want to be the very best of the game.
That's
where the finger pointing comes into play, right? In order to do this, you have to build this differently.
You have to
go down these other roads. And Pete Carroll goes to the doorstep of that every year, right? He brings in the new offensive coordinator. He lets Shoddy shovel. He lets these things happen. He starts that process.
But at the end of the day, Russell's just not that good at that. That's not what he's elite at. And Pete knows that. You know it. I know it. And most people out there know it, whether they want to admit it or not. Russell's not elite at that one thing. He's elite in general when you take the whole package together. But he seems to be stubbornly, in my opinion, trying to show that he can do something beyond the thing that he's already shown himself to be elite at. And I can't help you with that. If that's what you want to be, that's not what you're good at. And Pete should let that go. Sorry, I'm not going to continue to compromise my philosophy for something that you're not that good at.
And at this stage of the game, Russell is 34. Okay, you should probably call John Elway. You should probably call Peyton Manning. You should probably call Tom Brady. Tom Brady won last year, and Leonard Fournette had a lot to do with it. John Elway won two Super Bowls late in his career, and a run game had a lot to do with it. Peyton Manning won two Super Bowls, and the years that they won Super Bowls were with elite defenses and a good run game. Russell Wilson's been to two Super Bowls and won one when he had an elite defense and a run game. Right? Does it diminish John Elway that he won his two Super Bowls with Terrell Davis and an elite defense? No. He won two more Super Bowls, and he got to go out on top.
Not just two two.
Yes, he got to win the two of his career.
He never won them before.
So, correct. So if you're Russ, you know, at this stage of the game, yeah, I think the pissing match of, you know, I just need to play in a pass first system and do all this and play between the tackles and show that I can, you know, do everything. No. Go and play to your absolute strengths. And your absolute strengths are still your play action game, still your movement game, still your deep ball, still playing off of a run game, still taking immense care of the football. I take a little umbrage, Salk, when you say he's been terrible. I mean, it's 18 touchdowns, four
that's
picks.
Fair. Yeah, maybe it's an exaggeration. I mean, but you know that's not just how I judge quarterbacks. I judge them on what you do at the ends of games, and he's not doing those things very well.
He's not, in those critical moments and end of games and fourth quarter and, you know, coming back and doing all of that. But he's still protecting the football, which is, you know, a huge part of being in that system and playing that style of ball. So
that's a very good point. You're right. But that's ultimately terrible might be an exaggeration, but it's just not really the way I've ever judged him. So I don't know. We talked through that whole, like, why does he want to be the type of quarterback that he's not? Why does he want to be a different type of quarterback? I mentioned this on the show the other day. I'll tell you more about the Pebble experience, but we had a four caddy for our group, right? We didn't get individual caddies, but we had one guy who walked with us and you know, gave us advice on all the show, which you essentially couldn't play without, given the amount of wind that is there. I mean, like, he's like, oh yeah, this is a 120-yard shot. Play it as 180. You're like, okay. And, like, he's right. Like, he knows. He's like, oh, yeah. Yeah, you're going with the wind. It's going left to right. You're going to want to aim at this point, like, 30 yards to the left. And it's a 180 shot. Play at 140. So, like, without him, you couldn't even play. Like, it would have been a disaster. But he's a big sports fan, and he asked me at some point, he's like, hey, is Russell Wilson real or is he phony? That's a really good question. So I kind of follow, like, what do you mean, real or phony? And he's like, well, you know, is he a red light guy? Like, is he a different person when the camera's on versus when the camera's off? And I said, well, I don't know. I'm not around Russell enough to tell you that. But I don't get the sense that that's his problem. I don't get the sense that it's fake, that it's for the camera. I mean, he does stuff for the cameras, but not that it's about, like, being a nice guy publicly and a rotten human being behind the scenes. Going to Children's Hospital is real every week. The things he's done in the community and for charity. I think Russell is a genuinely good person, and that's never been a question.
He's not the kind of guy that you get whispers about. He's going around in the town pretending to be a church guy on the screen.
Right, and you know who those guys. I mean, like, Kurt Schilling, they called Red Light because he was a completely different, he was super, you know, well, now he's different entirely, but at the time, he was one thing when the red light was on for the camera and just a jerk other than that, right? You've heard that maybe about Jack Nicklaus and some other folks where it's like, they get a little different once the camera's on. That's when they kind of, you know, become, they soften. I don't think that's Russell's problem.
Mm-mm.
What I think it is with Russ that gives off that kind of whiff of phoniness is that I don't think his number one goal is to be the best quarterback he can be. I think his number one goal is to be the biggest star and celebrity he can be and the biggest name he can be. And the thing he's best at is playing quarterback, which is what he's using to achieve that ultimate goal.
Yeah, I think that's somewhat real, somewhat fair. I think he fights. I think he fights two things. And I think we talked about this last offseason after the Dan Patrick. I think he fights that he's right in the middle of Patrick Mahomes and Tom Brady. And that he envisioned himself of being Tom Brady, Right. He envisions himself as Howdy said, of being the greatest of all time. That's how he kind of framed his career, framed his life, framed his pursuits. You know, 10 years now, if he can win another game, I think he's the winningest quarterback in 10 years with Peyton Manning, yada, yada, yada. But, you know, he doesn't have the Super Bowls and he feels a long ways from that. And on one end of it, it's Tom Brady at 44 years of age doing it. And on the other end is this Patrick Mahomes guy that has just, right, changed the game and gets to throw it 40 times a game and gets to play with great flair and great charisma and great risk and have Tyreek Hill and Travis Kelce and all these offensive weapons and a great O-line and gets to do all of that. And I think he finds himself from an image, from a marketing, from a branding, from a star power, from all of that, just kind of stuck in between those two.
Yeah,
and that's not the position he wants to be in.
Yeah, I understand that point. I think there's some validity there. I also think that the way those guys all came about it is a little bit different. Tom Brady was not supposed to be Tom Brady, right? I mean, he in the early years of Tom Brady was him scrapping and clawing and yes, he had a belief in himself, but it's not like when Tom started, it was like, all right, I'm going to marry a supermodel and I'm going to do this, I'm going to do that. I don't get the sense he had that at all. He was a backup quarterback who got called upon when the highest paid quarterback in the league deflated his own lung on the sideline by getting destroyed by a hit. It all just sort of, he got thrown into it, and there's a great rags to riches story there, and ultimately it did lead to Giselle and everything else that came with that. But at the beginning, Brady wouldn't even take on endorsements. If you go back to the first couple of years of Tom Brady winning Super Bowls, zero endorsements. The first one he finally did, I forget what it was for like Visa or something like that. He did it with the entire offensive line. And that was like 2 or 3 years into Brady being Brady. It wasn't until later with Giselle and the Uggs and holding the goat and all of that stuff kind of came up, but it didn't happen at the beginning because I don't think it was ever part of his plan. The difference with Russ is that I think it's always been his plan. And we talked about this, Brock, 10 years ago.
Yes,
with the, what was it, guest jeans or whatever
Warren
the heck he
Moon
did?
Called into the show.
Wranglers.
Wranglers, is that what
when
it was?
He did his
Wranglers.
Okay.
In the draft.
Levi's.
Levi's. Yeah. Levi Wranglers, yeah.
I think Levi's and Wranglers are different companies.
You think so?
I think so.
Mm-hmm. I think Wranglers aren't Wranglers.
I think ones are Levi's and one's Strauss.
Yes.
And then there's Wranglers.
Yeah.
Brett Favre is always playing football, pick up football, and it's Wranglers.
Right. Those are just, they're different companies.
Copper bracelets.
Are you sure?
Yeah.
I thought maybe they had
I'm not sure at all.
Maybe
I'm
they
pretty
had some
sure.
sort of split. I think they're the same thing.
I don't think so.
They divested.
Like a line of Levi's.
Someone busted the monopoly.
I think it's like Ford and Chevy. Like, I think they're just flat out competitive.
I think it's like Lincoln and Ford, same shell, same parent company.
No, I don't.
It's like Ford and Mercury.
I don't think so. I think it's more like Ford and Chevy.
We'll find out next segment.
Sure. But yes, I mean, we've been talking about this with Russ since literally before he was named the starter.
Yep.
So the fact that that's like sort of his ultimate goal, in my estimation,
he said it. His goal is to be the best ever.
Well,
multiple
so there,
times throughout his career.
But the issue is, for what purpose? Everybody's goal is to be the best. For what purpose? Is it for because he wants to dominate the sport or for some of the trappings that come with that, with the social media and the this and the that? Like, I can't help but think that those things are his goals may be different, even if being the greatest athlete or the greatest quarterback helps achieve that goal.
A part of it is mental, right? Like, part of his great strength in getting to where he is in his career is his ability to envision himself in a certain way, right? To visualize this is how it's going to happen and to go through those mental reps. His mental game and preparation has been so far advanced. The whole league, it feels like, has been catching up to that mentality since he started getting in the league. When you have that ability to visualize, can you imagine you get really specific with how that comes into play? And when things start to deviate from that vision, I can't imagine how difficult it must be to then think, this is okay,
and instead
of saying, this is a diversion from where I want to go.
He needs an MVP in order to help, you know, fulfill that vision. He has never even received a vote. So I understand why he wants to do it differently, but that's why the whole do your job, trust this, trust the lack of trust thing becomes important. Because what is his biggest factor that he would use in determining who he wants to be an offense coordinator? Or he can help me be an MVP. I need that to check it off on the list on the resume. Well, but that doesn't mean it's what you're best at. And so now you got a conflict of interest.
Yep.
That's the issue to me. And that's why, Brock, you make really good points, I think, about whether or not Russ trusts Pete. And you're probably right about a lot of what you said. But I don't know if it's a tenable situation the other way around either.
Yeah, so when Jody Allen sits Pete down and John Schneider down individually and asks them the same question, do you trust that Russell's our quarterback for the next 5 years? Do you trust John that he's going to see you through your contract in 2027? Pete, do you trust that he's going to be the guy here in your last few years to resurrect this thing? Do you guys both trust?
Answer is going to be any more yes than Russell's was. And so now Jody's right back to square one. And what do you want to do? Do you want to sit these three down in a room and make them trust each other, do a bunch of trust fall exercises or whatever?
Kumbaya room.
Exactly.
Kumbaya.
Do you want to do that, or do you want to break up the band? And so while your question is a good one and leads to a great thought exercise, I don't know that it definitively answers anything for Jody Allen. I don't know what does, but man, she got a big decision on her hands, and she's only got a little while left to make it. Speaking of the best, temperature's been getting cold, right? We've been talking about that, right? Lower numbers than we've seen essentially ever.
62 degrees in this room as we record this.
It's really cold. I have my gloves on.
Howdy's in a beanie, socks, and gloves. I'm shivering.
All right, well, stay warm inside. Get a little Famous Dave's barbecue online. You know it's the best. They got all the barbecue classics. They're going to satiate any comfort food craving. And I will say, this is the type of weather that makes me go comfort food, right?
Yes.
Like, I want it to be as thick and unhealthy as possible.
I've been going mac and cheese and chocolate for days now. Yes.
That's actually not because of the weather. That's just Howdy's life.
Well,
that has nothing to do with the weather. The All-American Barbecue Feast, full slab, 12 bone St. Louis-style spare ribs. Yes, sir. Whole country roasted chicken. Half pound of either Texas beef brisket or Georgia chopped pork. Creamy coleslaw, Famous fries, Wilbur beans, sweet corn, cornbread muffins. Total price, $79.99. You're going to serve it family style, 4 to 6 people. Yes, sir. Appetizers from the burnt ends and Southside rib tips to wings and onion strings. I still haven't done enough on the burnt ends, by the way. We talk about it here, and I know you guys love them. I gotta go get me some burnt ends. Mm-hmm. I'm gonna go to Famous Dave's. I'm gonna try the ghost kitchen maybe and see if I can get myself some of those burnt ends. Next time I'm there, that's what I'm doing. 1, 2, 3 meat combo platter, salad, sandwiches, burgers, even dessert, award-winning bread pudding. You can do bread pudding this time of year.
Oh, yeah.
Right?
That's absolutely. Get that thing nice and hot.
Mm-hmm. Yes. You got doors open for dine-in at Everett, Tacoma, or Tukwila. You can also order online at FamousDaves.com. Get your Q curbside or delivered in the greater Seattle area. Stay warm famously this winter with Famous Dave's Barbecue. Well, Brock, I wanted to tell you about my experience, and we got Kyle and Howdy and everybody here. So it was, I did get to go to Pebble Beach. I have some thoughts on what I saw. It was a heck of a, first of all, I just want to say it was amazing. It lives up to its billing. The weather was, as you know, I've been bringing bad weather with me wherever I go. So we're in the Bay Area, and it's like raining. Nate's like, dude, it literally hasn't rained here in 6 months.
You show up, you're dark, dank, depressed,
I think it hasn't rained since the last time I was there in April. Like, he's like, I don't understand. But, you know, we're checking the weather constantly. And Nate, as I think I told you, was like getting like, hey, when do we say no to this?
Yeah,
like,
which was kind of weak.
That's what I thought. I'm like, dude, we're going unless it's bad. And sure enough, we wake up. It's me. I slept at Nate's the night before because we had to leave at like 4:30, 4:45 to get down there. Yeah, we had a 7:50 tea time.
How long was your drive?
2 hours.
Oh, I didn't realize.
Okay. Oh, yeah. It's 2 hours down to Monterey from where he lives. So it's a pretty good drive. So we had to wake up at like 4:30, 4:45. So I slept at his house. And we woke up early. And it rained every second of the drive down.
Oh, no.
It's like, oh, my God.
You're just looking at
but
each
like,
other.
We're looking at the weather, and it's like, it's going to get nice at 7:30, 8 o'clock. Like, everything showed us it's going to get nice.
And your tea time was at 7:50.
Yes.
So, yeah.
Perfect. So, like, you're trusting. You're like, it's going to get nice. It's going to get nice. So we get down there. It's still basically dark, and, like, it's pretty intimidating when you get there. I mean, like, you've got to drive down the 17-mile drive. Right.
Mm-hmm.
You've got to go by all the crazy houses that are there. You've got to stop at the gate and they're, you know, tell them that you've got a tea time and all of that. Like, there's a lot of intimidating moments, and you're seeing the signs for Spanish Bay and Cypress
Spyglass.
And Spyglass,
Poppy
and
Hills,
Monta Vista, like all of it there. And you're just like,
all right, drive along here.
Yeah. And you're feeling every, like, you feel the, like, do I deserve to be
now here? Is this like the Nile Shrine? Do they have a buttered dog at the turn?
No German dog.
Like, okay,
no German dog. So we get down there and we do the bag drop, and we're like, we were gonna stop at McDonald's. We had, so you're like rushing trying to get some food, and we wanted to get to the practice facility for a few minutes, which of course you got to take a bus to. So needless to say, we get to the tee area like 5 minutes before tee. I mean, like not as much time as I was kind of hoping to have, but we paid for it. I will let you know I did pay because Nate started to pay for me and I was like, yeah, oh, we can't do that. Like I ultimately just like stepped in. It was like, I'll pay for it. And so it's $575 to play.
You said adamantly that you weren't going to know what it was going to be. You stood on a hill and screamed at us
but
that you would never
but
know.
I did. Yeah, well, things changed.
Well, I wasn't able to do that.
I needed to clear his conscience before that walk.
Here's the thing. Tell me what you think about this. $575. So it's an exorbitant amount of money for a once-in-a-lifetime experience that was
the most money you will ever spend on a round of
golf. And it was worth every cent. Absolutely 100% worth every cent for the bucket list item. I do not regret it. I will ask this, though. If you spend $575 for a round of golf, would you bristle at all at paying $15 for a pull cart to go with it?
What? No. No way.
You're telling me that at $575 a round, you can't throw in the pull cart? They do that
at Inner Bay. The reusable resource?
They do that at Inner Bay.
What? That's tacky.
Isn't it?
That's not.
I thought that was a little tacky. Like, hey, charge me for a cart if I'm going to take a...
Well, they charge you $5 for a bucket of balls, too?
I don't know. Goodness. No, they didn't. Yeah, that's what I... Like, yeah. Here's the code.
Yeah, you got to go to the machine. Now, sir, if you want any tees, that'll be $1.
Everything else is fine, but they charge you $15 for a pull cart.
That's absurd.
And they're like the kind of not the great pull carts either. Oh, like not the like two-wheel the click ones.
Gear? Oh, come on.
Right?
Oh, right. That's so absurd.
I obviously, whatever. I'm not like looking to find the flaws in playing Pebble Beach.
But you found one.
I was a little...
and it's reasonable, by the way. Totally reasonable.
All right, I obviously paid the $15 and I didn't think twice about it, but I'm just like, really? $590? Right. Like, come on.
Are they trying to goad you into paying for a caddy?
Well,
which would
be
significantly more, right?
Right. Okay. Now, we got
a four caddy.
We got a four caddy, so we split that cost and tipped the guy. He was great. Rocket, 44 years he's been doing it. Stories galore, man. He's like, you see that house? You look over at the house, he's like, I watched that with watched the Super Bowl, John Madden in that house. Oh, my God. That sounds amazing.
Clint Eastwood lives there.
So we get up to the first tee, and we're kind of just, you know, warming up, getting ready, and this guy walks over, and he's like, you Mike Salk?
Who's
like,
asking?
Now, what do you say now? Like, yeah, I'm Mike. Nice to meet you. And he's like, hey, my name's Harrison. I'm a listener, and my parents live over here on the fifth hole, so thought I'd walk over and say hi. Super great. Really nice guy.
Not golfing.
No.
Just there.
Just came over to say hi. So here's the thing.
It's intense.
Super, very intense. Very nice. He couldn't have been nicer and more pleasant. And I think both Nate and Nate's friend Ryan were a little like...
That gives you some street cred.
A lot. They're like, dude, does this happen to you all the time?
Dude, I hope Rocket saw that.
Rocket did see this. I'm going to get to that in a moment. So Rocket, who's, you know, caddied for like Michael Jordan and Mike Ditka and like, you know, any number of...
No relation to Roger Clemens?
Not this Rocket, at least as far as I can tell. Yeah, nor to Rocket Ishmael.
Yeah, we're actually a whole family of Rockets, you know. It's a family nickname.
We started a company, Rocket Orange.
Nor to Daisuke's wife. None of those were the Rockets that were related to him. So anyway, Harrison was very nice. He left. Nate and his friend were super, like, pretty blown away by the whole thing. And so we're a few holes in, and Rocket and I start talking a little bit. He's like, you're a nicer guy than I am. I was like, well, that's probably true, but why would you say that? And he's like, that guy came over to me at the first tee. I'd have told him to go to hell.
What? Rocket, why?
And I'm like, well... I don't know. Like, I feel like it was a kind of a nice thing. Like,
obviously,
know,
a significant fan,
right? And I'm not like a huge celebrity or anything. Like, it's kind of very flattering when somebody like Harrison comes over to say hi. I really appreciated it. Plus, you know, it's radio. We feel like we're friends, and you know, people get to know you. It's great. And he's like, huh? Caddy for Michael Jordan. Nobody ever came up and said that. I'm like, well, I think Michael Jordan might be a little more intimidating than I am. So I was very pleased by the whole thing. But Rocket, like, dude, he wanted no part of that.
He was ready to protect your celebrity.
I thought he was going to jump in front of the bullet.
Hey, no picture, sir.
Oh, we're here at the first tee.
The caddy when someone's like, hey, guys, would you mind the phone?
So
was there a fourth?
Yes. So it was Nate's buddy who got us on, and Nate's father-in-law.
Okay.
Yeah. So those were our four.
Father-in-law.
I did play
the. And it did stop raining?
It stopped raining literally like on the first hole.
Amazing.
And ended up by the ninth hole being really pretty nice out. The first, like when you get into the wind, when you get to like, what is it, like 5, 6, it's unbelievable. 5, 6, 7, 8, they're beautiful. They're on the water. It's like, take the worst day you've had at Chambers in the wind and double it. Like, you couldn't, like, it was...
Like, it's hard to stand, keep your stance?
It was hard to think, honestly. Like, it was hard to, like, focus on what you wanted to do with your shot and your swing and all of that, because the wind was so, like, just, like, in your head. And so, like, I hit a shot from 115 out. He's like, hey, you're gonna aim that a little right. Like, okay. I aim it to the right side of the green, put it straight up in the air. I'm like, that's gonna be a good shot. I never found the ball. It must have blown 50 yards away over a cliff. I was like, to the left. I was like, how did that even happen? I mean, it was like playing with a ping pong ball at times. It was so crazy.
Frustrating.
It was definitely a bit of a challenge. And look, I'm not good enough to like deal with some of those challenges.
Yeah, I'm going to hit this a groove low.
Right. I can't do any of that. But it did mean that 7, the famous par 3, the short par 3, was playing at 70 yards.
Wow.
He's like, yeah, hit about a 70 shot. So honestly, it's like a chip.
Hit your standard 70 in your bag.
I put it on the green. I was the only one in the group to put it on the green because it's just a chip. So that was kind of exciting.
It's just knuckleballing in the air?
Pretty much.
Are you able? Wow.
Yeah. You just hit like a nice little chip shot down there. Missed the putt, of course. And then 8 is the forced carry on the second shot over the water. Dude, it's so intimidating. It was so freaking cool.
That's like the uphill to the...
That's the one where Jordan, Tiger, that's where right? Jordan yelled at it.
Oh,
at,
perfect shot,
perfect
Michael.
Perfect shot, Michael.
Okay.
So, of course, I asked. I was like, hey, is this where Jordan yelled at Greller? Just, oh, yeah, that's right here. Perfect. So, yeah, that was a bogey kind of laid up off to the side. But it was a blast, man. The views are insane. The course is just perfect.
Was it packed?
No.
How spaced out are the tee times?
Totally fine. We were never pushed the entire time we were out there, and we were not playing that fast. Finished in 4 hours.
You were playing pretty fast then.
Yeah, I mean, we were playing fast enough. Yeah. It was unbelievable. And I wish, and for those listening who are good golfers, I think you'll understand. I wish I was a better golfer in general, but also because I think I would have really appreciated it more. I think some of the challenges and the subtleties of like, hey, what do you do on this particular shot and how you handle it? I think that some of what makes it great, I'm not capable of understanding because I'm just trying to put the ball in the air.
Just trying to get a good ball strike.
Right, exactly. Yeah. And like, well, they're trying to draw it and keep it this.
It's going to be
that.
A low cut. Well, okay.
Right. And I think if you had some of those shots in your bag, it would be much more worth the $575 or $590, depending on if you get a hand card. The only other thing that kind of came out of it, Brock, is that I will say legitimately, and again, I am not, I guess two other things I want to say. The slightly negative thing, if you want to view it that way, is as great as it was, I did not think it was worth 4 times Chambers Bay. It really made me appreciate how great Chambers is, and to have that right in our backyard at a fairly reasonable rate if you book it ahead and stuff. Like, Chambers is unbelievable. And while Pebble might be a unique experience and has the history, it's not that much better than Chambers Bay. That definitely stood out to me. The other thing is, and I talked about this a little bit on the show, everyone should have a best friend like I do, man. Like, it was freaking awesome. Like, having a friend who will take you to do something like that and then being able to walk up the 18th fairway with your best buddy. We were best men in each other's weddings. We've been friends for 25 years now. Unbelievable, man.
It's cool.
That is really, really cool.
Everybody should have great friends. Like, it is, and I certainly consider the three of you guys on that list. Like, you should have great friends and work at your friendships and make them important to you because it pays dividends in life. You've got to have it.
Because as cool as it was, if it was by yourself or with 3 other strangers, not anywhere near.
How could
not
it be?
Anywhere near.
Because who do you turn to and just be like, dude, this is pretty awesome. Oh.
Like, or down the road, hey, remember?
Right.
Remember walking up 8?
Yes.
How about that shot?
Right. Exactly. Like, you just need that stuff. I don't know. I tweeted out a picture of Nate in the biggest sand trap I've ever seen. He looked like a small, like a little, like hummingbird
like
in the ocean. He's just like, dude.
Like, you should have put out a lawn chair and just like pulled out a sun ray and just soaked it in.
It was pretty
okay,
amazing.
Okay, so two questions.
Saul. All right.
What was your best shot of the day?
Easy. 16. Once I finally put the driver away, I started striping the 4-iron off the tee. Rocket told me that I should take the driver and use it as a very expensive poker for my fire moving forward.
Oh, Good advice from Rocket.
Never use that thing again. You're striping your four hybrid off the tee. On 16, I went four hybrid. Second one was about a 220, 210 yard approach that went to about 10, 12 feet.
Woo! Felt good.
Luckiest shot of my life. Missed the putt.
Okay.
Yeah. That was by far my best shot.
Wow.
Yeah.
Worst shot of the day.
All of the other ones. No. What is it? Number six, which goes, it looks a lot. I don't know. This is getting a little technical. So if you're not super into golf and haven't played Chambers
here
a lot,
we may need to skip forward.
Think about hole four at Chambers, the par five, the second par five.
Three is the par three.
Okay. And then you go up the hill to the right. Yep. Imagine that, except on the right, instead of it being a giant sand trap, it's just water.
That's intimidating.
That's six at Pebble Beach. I just forgot how to play for a few minutes. Do you know what I mean? We're just I don't even know what to do to get up over this hill and all of that. And that's where I ended up hitting the shot that ended up blowing 40 yards off to the left.
And it's gone.
He's just I don't even know what to do here. So yeah.
Okay. How about the 18th tee? I know you played the gold.
Yeah, we did.
How intimidating is the 18th tee?
Well, I hit four irons, so it wasn't that intimidating, to be honest with you. The driver was gone at that point, so it was not intimidating at all. I hit a 200-yard shot to the right of the tree and kind of.
And you weren't likely to. A hook would be a problem there, but you can fade slice.
Yeah, I actually didn't think it was right. Yeah, I hit a nice little draw off to the right, and it was just fine. Actually, that was one of my better shots of the day. Was that tee shot? I can. I'll send you the video of it.
So you actually got to talk with Macklemore before you did this.
I did,
and you guys were going off on just talking about Pebble. I just thought it was really interesting. You asked him. I think a question was, how would you envision me as I approach the first tee? I thought his answer was really surprising.
Rock hard and tiny.
I was just really surprised that that's...
Wow, that's...
That's the vision.
Howdy.
Was that the question? Maybe I got the question wrong.
Maybe. Wow. Howdy.
Hey, I got into it with the professor today. Did I tell you?
No.
Yeah, John and I kind of got into it a little bit. It was good.
It was a thing of beauty.
Yeah, it was a little old school. Generally, I haven't been fighting with the professor, really anybody, all that much. But I kind of got into it a little bit with the professor this morning over this question. Would you trade DK Metcalf this offseason? And it started by me asking just really what DK was worth. And of course, John was like, it doesn't matter. You're not going to trade him. I'm like, all right, well, just start by telling me what you think he's worth. Then we'll fight about whether or not you trade him. And he said a first and a third. I think he might be worth a little more than that based on what Jamal Adams was worth. But I don't know. Maybe I'm crazy.
Mm-hmm.
Would you think about that?
Gosh, I'd have a hard time, Mike. Just as a homegrown guy that loves it here, that you... I'd have a hard time with that one, because I think he is.
Are you referring
such
to you or him? I know you're a homegrown guy that loves it here. Is he?
No, not necessarily. Though I do think he loves it here. I think his sister's out here with him, and I think he would. I think some of just his eccentric and fun and charisma and playing for these fans, and I think earning a deal here, right, and turning from the last pick of the second round into one of the more dominant players at that position in the league, I'd have a hard time making that move.
So you're going to spend $37 million on two wide receivers?
Don't love that either.
Right. I mean, that's sort of where this comes from. I mean, you and I have obviously had these conversations before. When I bring up the idea of trading DK Metcalf, it's not because I want to get rid of DK Metcalf, or I don't like him, or I don't think he's good, or I want to just, cut him. It's, do you want to spend $37 million on two wide receivers? And if you're not, you got to deal him this offseason before, it's time to figure that out, right?
Yeah. I think some of the challenge is you've drafted a lot of receivers. You've tried to bring in a lot of different receivers, right? That's kind of a position similar to the O-line. You have spent capital in the draft at that position, and it's been hard. It's been hard to find. Tyler obviously was an absolute gem and going to be a Ring of Honor guy and doing some unbelievable stuff. So you hit on him, and I think a DK, you've hit on him. And I just don't I think with as much salary cap space as you have, Mike, I think that he is an asset you'd rather have than one you trade.
Yeah, I don't know. So I think it's an interesting one, and I guess maybe it depends first on what you're going to do with Russ. And if Russ isn't going to be here, well, then there's no reason to have DK, right? I mean, unless you're into this whole Russ for – we had somebody bring up the idea of Russ for Deshaun Watson, and maybe there's something there. I said that I'm going to do a little more research on what's going on with Deshaun Watson before I jump into those waters. But if you're looking at – you know, Pete saying the essence of what we do is fine. We don't have enough stars. We need more, you know, dudes on this team. And we've got to figure out a way to not rebuild it, but, you know, kind of regenerate some of that. Well, where are you going to go get the power to do that from? Yeah, some of it's through free agency and cap space. But if you want, you know, top tier picks at the right kind of positions, you got to start thinking about where you're going to get those. And as much as I love DK Metcalf, I certainly don't want to spend $37 million at the wide receiver position. And quite frankly, I'm not sure spending that kind of money on any one wide receiver makes a tremendous amount of sense for trying to win Super Bowls.
And I think he's going to say to you, but also too, let's put it this way, Mike, he is one of your stars.
He
and
is.
When you have one of your stars and you need more stars, why in the world would you get rid of one of your young stars? And I think in that case, I tend to land a little more on his side of the ledger, that if you are in the star building and you need to upgrade your talent and you have to have difference makers and home run hitters that can change a game at any moment. And I do think his game is still raw. I think an element, and this was brought up when I did that Tuesday night game, talking to some people, is they said, hey, watch DK in warmups. Watch him and see if he can even, because he's been so limited this year. There's a lot of speculation that he may even have surgery when the season ends on that foot, that he has played through a significant foot injury this year. Yet again, another reason that, man, if you've got a guy like that, how many receivers do that?
Most Not that many, say, but because of that, how much is he worth, Brock? I love DK Metcalf. I love watching him. I love that they drafted him. I thought they did it all right. You're right. He's probably playing hurt. He's probably better than he's shown this year. Dude's a physical freak, and he surprised everybody by showing he can stay healthy through the first few years of his career.
Yep.
But do you want to spend that much money on a wide receiver? Is that the best thing for winning Super Bowls?
It has not been the best thing for winning Super Bowls. It's not. But I think in this case, when it comes to your roster and your stars on this roster, okay, so you trade him for first and third.
I'd probably need more than that, to be honest with you. And I think he could generate more. I don't mean to disagree with the professor. He knows more about this than I do. But I think if you're right about that and DK and what he can do in terms of, you know, coming, I think he might be worth more.
You need like a reverse Jimmy Graham trade, basically. You need a first rounder at a young star at a position you care about, like on the defense or the offensive line.
Okay.
If you could pull that kind of deal off, then I'd be much more. Football trades involving draft picks are so much more challenging than they are in baseball, because in baseball, you have a lot more information about whether a guy's going to project and turn out. In football, man, you really don't know if those draft picks are even going to come close to the player that you traded.
All true, 100%. And then, you know, sometimes you deal away a pick and it turns out to be a top 10. Yeah,
I would say this. I would say this as well, and this is probably the final that just tips it to a no, is, or makes me feel better about that money spent, Mike, is just DK's mentality is just not your diva, protect myself kind of wide receiver guy. He is just a ferocious, physical, freakish football player that will block, that will play injured, that could, you know, transition and play. I'm not saying he will be, you know, a Shannon Sharp one day, but he's a versatile dude. He is a physical presence. He is everything you want and still very, very young. So is it ideal to spend that kind of money at that position? No. Is it being done more now? Yes. Does he have the physical offsets, the physical mentality, so many of those things that other receivers don't have? I think he's answered that and checked that. And yeah, I think I'm more comfortable in keeping him here than I am trying, you know, that bird in the hand, right? And he's a big old bird. He's a pterodactyl. He's just a difference maker.
I think there's a lot of validity there. And look, at the end of the day, they probably won't deal him, A, because generally it's hard to make deals in the NFL. And secondly, like, teams just don't do that. They don't behave that way in the NFL the way they do in baseball. They don't deal a star player before they lose him to free agency. They just lose
Stephon Diggs be an example?
Yeah, there's one.
Yeah, there's. I mean, they're very, very few and far between.
But it's rare. What did they get for Stephon Diggs? I don't remember. I'd have to go back and look. But it's rare. Like, it just, that style of thinking generally doesn't work the same way in the NFL as it does in baseball. So it probably won't happen. But I do think it's an interesting debate before you pay this guy of whether or not you want to at least think about doing this a different way. If you trade Russell Wilson, you almost have to trade DK Metcalf at that point, right? You got to bring back as much as you can and try to like get this thing going in a year or two. So I don't know. It's we'll see what happens. I don't like ready to say this is what they should do. But I do think there's a very real argument to be made there. And depending on which direction they go in the first few moves they make this offseason will probably dictate what the rest of that conversation sounds like.
Yeah. They beat the Lions Sunday.
I'm not answering.
Ooh, Lions are playing well lately, too.
I don't know. Is Russell Wilson going to show up, or are we going to get the same shell that we've watched for the rest of this year? I just don't know how to answer that. So without it, man, I don't know. I'm just glad we didn't go three weeks and do a podcast with three losses in between. That would have been too much for me to handle. All right, bud. Time for us to go. We will do this next week in the new year, our first podcast of the new year. Are you excited?
I am. Yeah, I am. Actually, I think this will be the last football game of the season for me. I've had kind of a couple bonuses here. I thought the season was done. Hay was in the barn, but with COVID, you know, kind of crazy stuff. So
hey, you did a great job. I meant to tell you, we didn't even get to that. You were awesome, I thought, on the game the other night. I thought you did a really, really good job. Great with Chris Myers. Mm-hmm. And it was a really good broadcast.
Oh, well, I appreciate that. Thank you.
Your telestrator of that throw Stafford made into that window was, whew, that was impressive.
The throw or the telestration?
The telestration mainly.
Okay.
The eye for the analysis.
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of Cooper Kupp love in there. I think you made it very clear that you like Cooper Kupp.
Love you some Cooper Kupp.
Yes, I think you were
What's in my cup?
Yes, you were very clear about that.
He was in my cup. In my cup. Gosh, I could have used that before the game.
I mean, it did become a worldwide sensation.
Give it to the production crew. You could have come in and out.
It would have been like, what are you talking about? And then, all right. Well, there you go. Brock, thank you. This is a lot of fun. We will catch everybody in the new year. Happy New Year, and the hay
is in the barn.
See everybody.